What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app, and on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, every Thursday, and every Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We also want to give a shout out to our friends over at Locked On Bears. If you're a big Bears fan, go give Locked On Bears a subscribe. Listen to them. They've got all your Bears coverage for you. So we've gotten some pretty great feedback from all of you that have listened at Locked On Bulls. Now that you know that the transition is here, we are the new hosts. Plenty of love on social media, and just the reaction over the last few days has been great. So we appreciate that. We want you guys to continue to do that. Right off the bat, want to announce again, once again, if you have not heard, we are giving away a Lauri Markkanen jersey. So Lauri Markkanen, Bulls stud, we're giving away a jersey to one of our lucky listeners. So there's a couple ways, different ways that you can enter to win, either on Twitter, Facebook, or through email. So if you're on Twitter, it'll take you literally 10 seconds. Go to our Twitter feed at Locked On Bulls. Retweet the tweet with the picture, favorite it, and follow us, and you'll be automatically entered to win. If you don't like using Twitter, go to Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnBulls, and go and like our page and like the picture with the entry, and you will be entered in to win the Lauri Markkanen jersey. And if you don't like using either of those social medias, then go ahead and send us an email of you subscribing to the show, and you will also be entered three times, as you have three times as many times to win the Lauri Markkanen jersey. So if you just send us a screenshot of you subscribing to the show, you'll have three times as many entries, triple the chance to win. So go ahead and do that. We're going to announce that on Tuesday's show coming up, so you have a few days to do that. But what's going on, Matt? Let's talk a little bit about some of these games here.
Yeah, how you doing? I'm doing all right, Jordan. I'm actually fighting my way through a pretty terrible cold. It's, you know, that time of year when Chicago fall turns to winter and you just get that crud, that awful head cold. I'm fighting through it. There are a few things I would fight through this bad of a cold for, but this podcast, Locked On Bulls, definitely one of them, because, I mean, I've just missed you so terribly over the last 24 hours since the last time we recorded.
And I think our listeners have missed us over the last 24 hours. But if you're here again with us, that means that you didn't terribly hate us on the last episode. So that's a good thing. A few housekeeping notes before we start kind of diving into some of these games and talking about the Bulls matchup against the Thunder tonight. A few housekeeping things. So first of all, LockedOnBulls.com. We're having a new website that's coming up in the next week or so. Hopefully it's live by then. That's where you'll get fresh written Bulls content, not only from me and Matt, but from other writers. The site is paired with FanRag Sports, so it's a pretty great opportunity. It'll just give you another avenue to get all of your Bulls content written, and the podcast version will all be on LockedOnBulls.com. A couple other things. With our episodes, obviously our goal here is to do 5 episodes a week, Monday through Friday, have fresh content for all of our Bulls fans out there. But obviously things are going to happen over the course of the season. There's going to be periods in the Bulls stretch of the season where they might have 2 or 3 days off, which we saw early on, and we might not have any content for you guys. So there's going to be days where, you know, we might skip a day here or there to, without an episode, but just plan to hear us between 4 and 5 days a week, 30-minute episodes. And we want to give you guys the freshest content every single day and a little bit of a taste of Bulls news each and every day. So Few of those things. Another one is if you own a business, or if you know somebody that owns a business and wants to sponsor the show or advertise on the show, go ahead and have them send an email to us at LockedOnBulls.com. We'd love to talk with them. We'd love to have them advertise here on Locked On Bulls. All right, let's get to what everybody wants to listen to us talk about. So we had a long weekend in which we didn't produce any shows, Matt, and we had 2 games go on back-to-back Friday and Saturday, the Bulls losing both of those games, one to the Indiana Pacers and the other to the San Antonio Spurs. One game was a little closer than the other, and let's just be honest, on Saturday, the Bulls got their asses handed to them. How about that?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me for those 2 defeats to Indiana and San Antonio is something that Coach Fred Hoiberg said, just kind of, he was disgusted with the lack of effort, and I think that's something that Bulls fans want to see. If you're brave enough to watch, because you know more often than not, if you tune in, you're going to watch this team lose. but you don't want to watch them lose and quit halfway through the game. And look, I know the Spurs are a good team, but they were playing shorthanded. The Spurs were missing like a third of that roster, and they're still a well-coached team. Obviously, not an easy task to try to play level with the San Antonio Spurs at any time in any location, but it's the lack of effort. Because this Bulls team just does not have any room for error. And that's another a common phrase you hear from Fred Hoiberg. No room for error. And the Bulls, in both of those losses to San Antonio and the Pacers, costly errors just kind of looked like their heads were not in the game. And that's not what you want to see.
I was going to say this, too. And this is an early question to bring up to you. And we can kind of talk about this. Is this going to be kind of a reoccurring trend? Because didn't Fred Hoiberg just chew them out when they played the Thunder a few weeks ago for the 101-69 loss at home, where he said that the team had zero effort, that they weren't in it from the start, that they quit on everybody?
We took a huge step in the wrong direction tonight. You know, we didn't compete. We didn't stay together. We didn't fight through adversity as a team. We were careless. We were stagnant. They got the loose balls. You know, that can't happen. That cannot happen with this group. It's very disappointing coming off, you know, the encouraging win against Atlanta by doing all the little things, by winning the 50-50 battle, by dominating the glass. You know, we had none of that tonight, and our body language sucked.
I get it. There's going to be a ton of lows for a team that's rebuilding and a team like the Bulls who are relatively young. There's going to be plenty of lows in this season, but that's the one thing that you would hope a young team doesn't do is just all of a sudden quit on you. And that's got me slightly a little bit worried if Fred Hoiberg again has to come out and say, you know, we had no effort, you know, there was nobody was pushing it out there. Nobody seemed like they were even really cared. Is that something that kind of concerns you now kind of going in deeper into the season here?
Well, what concerns me is something that you and I have talked about before on previous episodes, or even during the offseason and towards the tail end of last season, and that's what kind of leader is Fred Hoiberg going to be at the NBA level? Because we know and we can have respect for what he accomplished at Iowa State at the collegiate level, but he clearly was not very good at handling the big-headed egos of guys like Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah, and last year, the additions of Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. This year, with a humble, underrated center in Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, a journeyman mid-tier player, being the two veteran leaders, and a bunch of young guys eager to prove themselves and make their NBA careers, you would think that Hoiberg would have a better grasp on what it means to lead this team and do it more successfully. Now, you know, we remember Jimmy Butler called out Hoiberg for not coaching hard enough, and that was halfway through his first year on the job, and that created a huge stir. And since then, I feel like Butler always felt that. Butler never really thought that Hoiberg was hard enough on guys, and that's why Butler butted heads with some guys in the locker room. So what about now? Now that those big egos are gone, we're hearing Hoiberg call out his young guys if they're not trying, if they're not caring. I mean, I think that's a good thing because it's change from what we've seen in the past where it sounds like Hoiberg's too easy on guys, but will they respond? That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, and I think something else for Bulls fans to keep in mind is like, we want Fred Hoiberg to do these things that we're talking about here, get on his guys when they're not having any effort, have some type of control over the locker room, and be some type of presence. But we knew coming in when Fred Hoiberg got hired that he wasn't the way Tom Thibodeau is in screaming and yelling until he's blue in the face type of coach. He's just not that guy. And yeah, you can have a type of medium. You can have a little bit of a balance of both. And it's something that Fred Hoiberg knows he's got to work on, and you can't expect him to just change as a coach overnight. It's just not going to happen for Bulls fans. And so little baby steps, I think, in terms of Fred Hoiberg, and I know this is his third season here with the Bulls now, but baby steps in terms of what we actually want out of him from a rebuilding standpoint and what he can actually do and accomplish under a rebuild, because now finally for the first time, the Bulls are actually committing to playing the way Fred Hoiberg wants and the kind of the way he wants the team on the court and in the locker room structured. So now the keys are given to Fred Hoiberg. So now it's his turn to step up. And I think for the most part, calling out his guys a couple different times here early on kind of sets a tone, and it's good for Fred Hoiberg and good to see some of those baby steps going on, but he can't regress when things happen. And if there ends up being fights again, and I'm not talking physical fights like Portis and Mirotić. But, you know, uncomfortable situations in the locker room, you want to see Fred Hoiberg and the way he's going to be able to handle that. And you want him to handle it in a professional manner, in a way that's going to further the culture that the Bulls have talked about wanting to build for the longest time.
Absolutely. And look, the only concern is not how he's leading these young guys now, as far as the locker room getting along, responding to what his coaching is, but literally, as far as an X's and O's standpoint on the floor, are they executing the offense Fred Hoiberg wants them to? Because obviously we have seen a significant uptick in three-point attempts as compared to last season. That's obviously a piece of the puzzle, but it's not just about that. It's also about pace. And when you look at numbers like pace and total offensive efficiency, the Bulls are still pretty much bottom of the barrel across the NBA, and that's not what you want. Obviously, it's going to take some time. You know, we're, what, barely 10 games into year one of the rebuild, finally committing to what Fred Hoiberg wants to do on the floor. No more ISO ball for Jimmy and D. Wade. It will take time, but you want to see more frequent examples of that kind of offense working. Because maybe we just have to face the fact that Fred Hoiberg is not the offensive NBA whiz kid that Paxson and Gar, namely Gar, thought he was when they hired him.
Funny thing that you bring up the stats, so I want to throw some of these stats your way. Just kind of give Bulls fans an understanding of where the Bulls stack up against the rest of the NBA so far coming into tonight against the Thunder. I did this last week on my Twitter feed, so you can kind of go back and look at those numbers compared to now this week's numbers. And with a little bit more of a bigger sample size too as well, it kind of gives you a better idea of how the Bulls have been performing and how they've been playing and how they stack up against the other teams in the league early on. So points per game, they're obviously, points per game, they're last, 93.6. That puts them dead last in the NBA. So obviously not scoring a whole ton. Shooting percentage is also dead last at 40.9%. That's dead last as well. 2-point percent shooting is 46%. That's 29. So that's second worst in the NBA. And then 3-point shooting percentage is 31.8%, which is third worst in the NBA. So just looking at those basic box score numbers, you can tell obviously the Bulls aren't a very good offensive team, but the defensive numbers will have you a little bit more curious, because the Bulls, the way they stack up on defense, is actually somewhere between the middle third of teams in the NBA, which actually surprises me a lot. Do you think, and I think it has to attribute to guys like Robin Lopez underneath, who, you know, yeah, he's not like an elite defender or anything, but he's better than anything else the Bulls really have on there. And I think that's what's helping the Bulls. Now, once they move him and maybe move a couple of these other pieces, that might tend to slide. But you would think that the Bulls would be almost last in every single category. And that's really not the case at all if you look at the team stacked
up.
Yeah,
and again, we're dealing with a small sample size thus far, but I would absolutely say thus far, surprised at those defensive numbers. Obviously, Robin Lopez, a strong defender, a strong help defender. And there are other elements to this team. I know he's been out for a week or so now, and hopefully we'll get him back soon. David Nwaba, I think, also a strong player on the defensive end. Chris Dunn, as he's trying to fight his way, it sounds like he is going to get his first start tonight against the Thunder, because Justin Holiday stayed back home because his wife just gave birth to their first child. So congrats to Holiday on that. But Dunn, a solid defender. That being said, I am still very surprised that the Bulls are not the worst defensive team in the league. And maybe that says something about, across the NBA, the value or lack thereof that is placed on defensive basketball these days. Because, I mean, I know that they may start to be turning things around a little bit right now, but did you watch the Cleveland Cavaliers, the LeBron-led Cavs, try to play defense in the first, you know, eight or ten so games that they played this season? It was a joke. Nobody played defense. Cough, looking at you, Dwayne Wade. Cough, cough.
And convenient for him, yeah. And all of a sudden, what's funny too, real quick, before I give you those defensive numbers, real quick, isn't it funny how Cavs fans and maybe some other fans around the NBA that weren't not necessarily watching Bulls games last year. Now they kind of understand what they're getting into in an old Dwayne Wade. There were so many times this summer where I saw Cavs fans and I saw fans around the NBA that it was clear that nobody had watched Dwayne Wade play outside of like the last 3 weeks of the season. They were like, oh, you know, he can do this. You know, maybe he can come off the bench for 20 minutes, score 12, 15 points. No, Dwayne Wade is worse than a chair sitting out there playing on defense. And he's, you know, he's old. He's old. And that's what we saw here in Chicago. And I think now NBA fans are getting a little bit of more of that reality if you they didn't pay attention last year.
Yeah, any Bulls fans that were excited about the Wade signing, I'm sorry, I feel bad for you. You should have seen that coming. And same goes for Cavs fans this season. Look, no disrespect to the man and his career that he's built. You know, he's a three-time champion, first bout Hall of Famer for sure. But he's done. I just think there is no tread left on those tires for Dwayne Wade. And, I mean, I will be very curious to see what that Cavs team does. I know, you know, we kind of came into this season thinking, all right, some other pieces moved around. The Celtics, Hayward, oops, that, you know, didn't work out too well, that tragic opening night injury for him. But, and, you know, different pieces over in the West. You got PG-13 and Melo playing with Russ now and what's going on there. But everybody agreed, right? It's going to be Warriors Cavs part four. I'm starting to maybe think that might not be a given. And I will probably, as we go through towards the season, as assuming that the Cavs just make the playoffs, all that they need to do is make the playoffs and then let LeBron do the rest. We'll see what, you know, how and when Isaiah Thomas comes into that plan, but that Boston Celtics team, my goodness.
Yeah, and I know it's early, and we keep emphasizing what we're talking about, and it's early. We're talking specifically about what we've seen right now. Back to the Dwayne Wade point real fast. Yeah, we're not ripping on Dwayne Wade for his career or anything. The dude's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was an awesome player for a very long time in the NBA. Specifically just talking about the last two seasons. Last year specifically, and now moving into this season. But here are some of those defensive numbers getting back to the Bulls. So the Bulls are giving up an average of 103.9, so 104 points a game. That stacks up as ninth best in the NBA. So the Bulls are a top 10 team when it comes to giving up points against opponents so far this season, which is actually very surprising to me. I thought it would be way high. I thought the Bulls would be way lower on that list. They'd be giving up a ton more points. Opponents are shooting 46.4% against the Bulls, so that's ninth worst in the NBA. So teams are finding relative success against the Bulls. These are kind of the staggering numbers, though. So the Bulls, in terms of scoring in the paint and from inside the arc, the Bulls are only giving up 49.6% to opponents in the two-point range, which is actually 11th best in the NBA. So the Bulls, again, in the top third of the teams in the NBA as far as defense down low and what shots they're giving up. Now, for the flip side, the Bulls are dead last in three-point percentage given to opponents, and that's 40%. And they're the only team giving up 40% from the three night in and night out to opponents. So that puts them dead last. But it's a little bit interesting to think about. And so this is kind of where we can talk about how does the Bulls become affected now that you see that, and maybe the possible moves that they will make and how these numbers will adjust. And I'm thinking more specifically guys like Robin Lopez if and when he gets moved, and guys like Zach LaVine coming back and Bobby Portis playing, and God knows what they get for Nico Mirotic or what they do with him, but all of those things could make these numbers shift dramatically coming in the next couple months.
Yeah, it's going to look like a different team by the end of the season. And at least we know because of Zach LaVine and perhaps because of the departure of Robin Lopez, if the Bulls decide to try to get something for him before the deadline. But another thing you have to think about is this is basically a near 100% turnover on this team, right, from last season. I mean, this is a group of guys playing together for the first time coming into training camp, a lot of them. Like, yeah, Denzel was here last year. Jaren Grant was here last year. Hey, remember Cameron Payne? Yeah, he's not playing yet. But I feel like, and this is just my opinion, I feel like it's a lot more difficult to get five guys to play on a string on the defensive end than it is to get them to gel and have nights where they find success on the offensive end. That's just my personal opinion. That's the way I see it. And that's why I think part of what the Bulls are struggling to do defensively, as you noted, the fact that they're giving up the best three-point percentage on any given night. Lopez can do his job down low. I think Markkanen has impressed me thus far. I was more worried, I guess, than I should have been about his defensive footwork coming out of the draft. He's still got ways to go and muscle to build, but he's been better than expected. But it's about those guys guarding the perimeter and what they've struggled to do. And I think a lot of that is communication on defense, and that's something that Tom Thibodeau absolutely anchored this defense with while he was here. And I just don't really see anybody taking that leadership role communicatively on the Bulls' defensive end.
Yeah, and another thing that I thought about, too, with these stats in terms of, like, the amount of shots the Bulls are taking per game and compared and stacked up against the rest of the NBA, I can give you those right now. So the Bulls are attempting 87 shots a game. That's sixth best in the NBA right now, the sixth highest in the NBA. In terms of field goals made per game, they're second to last, with only making about 36 of those. In terms of three-point attempts, two per game, they're shooting 31 times from the three-point arc. That's in the top 10. That's ninth among teams, and the Bulls sit at 9.8 shots from three made, and that sits them at the lower third of the NBA at 19th. So the Bulls are taking a ton of shots. There's no doubt about that. It seems like that Fred Hoiberg offense, that where they said, you know, pace is what they want, and they want the Bulls to try and shoot, just continue to try and shoot. And that's what you're seeing here. Now, the Bulls aren't knocking down a lot of those shots, but it's good to at least get these young guys out there and see if these guys can actually score and be, you know, legitimate offensive contributors for this team moving forward. And I expect those numbers to rise once, especially once Zach LaVine comes back and Justin Holiday, hopefully his shooting skid that he's had over the first, you know, I don't know what, 12 games, 11 games the Bulls have played. Hopefully that improves, and I see that improving. And we talked about his percentage, that he was on pace to be one of the worst volume scorers in NBA history. Obviously, so we hope that, you know, he regresses back towards the mean. But it's kind of shocking on the defensive end. And maybe that attribution plays into the factor of the Bulls in general are giving up a ton of shots and the teams are scoring. And in combination, Robin Lopez is playing pretty decent defense. And some of these other guys that we didn't think were going to play decent defense have been better than expected.
And again, we've played, you know, we're 11, 12 games into the season, and this team might look a lot different in March and April than it does right now. So that those levels, as far as where the Bulls stack up compared to the rest of the league, they might change. I would be surprised if they don't. But just looking ahead now to this game against the Thunder tonight and what the Bulls will try to do, put up a more respectable outcome than last time they played the Thunder, when they lost by, I believe, 32. Russ Westbrook got his first triple-double against the Bulls, the last team in the league he had yet to do that against. Melo and PG-13 each chipped in with like 20-something. The Thunder are going to be without Steven Adams tonight, and it sounds like they may also be without Melo. They still got Russ, who's going to do his thing. If the Bulls have any chance to stay competitive in this game, those role players who are primarily, if you see an open shot, take it kind of players, they need to be hitting their shots. And I don't know about you, Jordan, I was pretty, my curiosity was piqued when I saw earlier today that it is, in fact, the veteran Quincy Pondexter getting the start at the three in the absence of, not only the absence of Justin Holiday, but also because Paul Zipser has sort of lost that starting spot and has not been playing well. He's coming off the bench now. But Pondexter over Denzel Valentine to start at the three. What are your thoughts on that?
To me, I liked Fred Hoiberg's explanation of it. And he said he likes the way Denzel Valentine's been shooting with the second unit. And he said he values Denzel Valentine's ability to score with that second unit. And you know what? Fred Hoiberg's right. I mean, if you decide to start Denzel Valentine, who do you have coming off the bench that's going to score for
Bobby
you?
Bobby Portis, like you, baby!
Yeah, besides Bobby, and hopefully he does continue to do what he's been doing off the bench. But adding that second piece to that, with Portis and Valentine, having two guys that can have proven, at least early, that they can come off the bench and provide some scoring for the Bulls, I don't really have a problem with it. And to be honest with you, I don't really want Denzel Valentine, Jerry Grant, and Chris Dunn on the floor at the same time. And you also have to think about this too in terms of the game. Like, the guys that the Thunder are going to have on the floor, like you talked about with Russell Westbrook and Paul George, and then if Carmelo does in fact play tonight, those are three guys that you're going to have to figure out who's going to play defense on them. And do you trust Denzel Valentine to play defense on either Paul George or a guy like Melo or even some of the other options that they have on this team? Do you really expect them to do that? And then also, too, the Thunder have Andre Roberson, who is, you know, known for his defense, too. So I would rather I like the decision for Fred Hoiberg to keep him on the bench and allow him to continue doing what he's seen as a strength for Valentine, is coming off with that second unit in scoring. So I like the decision made here. And who knows, maybe Quincy Pondexter is just getting stuck there in the starting role. And really, at the end of the day, Denzel Valentine's going to play more minutes than Quincy Pondexter. And that's kind of what I expect tonight. No,
that makes sense as far as what Hoiberg said, with the explanation of, you know, providing an offensive boost for that second unit. I get it. I just, you know, I'm looking a little bit down the road here. And I'm wondering, you know, Denzel Valentine has said, yeah, I want to start. Like, who doesn't want to start? Of course I want to start. And he seems to be, because Hoiberg likes him there, stuck right now, at least, in this role of playing a reserve, you know, playing off that bench. I just wonder about a lot of Bulls fans out there who were skeptical of the Denzel Valentine pick when it first happened. A guy that people say, you know, his NBA ceiling is pretty low. His NBA floor is pretty low. Like, do you see, and, you know, we might learn more about this as the season goes on, but, you know, not necessarily talking about what he might be able to accomplish against the Thunder tonight, but for the rest of this season, do you think Denzel's ever going to get a chance to start on this team? And do you see him as a starter in this league ever? Because I'm not sure I do.
Yeah, I'm at this point, when what we even had this discussion, I think, before the season even started. And we said kind of what we were asking ourselves, like, what is Denzel Valentine's ceiling now that we kind of have a taste of what he can do? And if you're an optimistic Bulls fan and you figure that what you've seen early, my ceiling for Denzel Valentine, six man on this team, because, like, look at when Zach LaVine comes back, he's going to fill that role. Justin Holiday is going to be here. He's going to fill that role as well. So you kind of are almost limited to where you could play Denzel Valentine. And I'm not crazy about the idea of him starting at the three. Like, that to me just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So you're just going to have, I don't know. I don't see Denzel Valentine's skill kind of matching up to what the Bulls would want to do as a starter. I think Fred Hoiberg, if he's smart, and Denzel Valentine, if he continues to play well off the bench, they'll kind of push that strength and kind of continue to play to that strength. But if I'm optimistic, and I tend to be optimistic with the Bulls, I would hope Denzel Valentine's ceiling is a sixth man and his floor would be eventually off this team before the Bulls get any good. Maybe there's a happy medium and somewhere in between he happens to go. But I think if Fred Hoiberg uses him right and develops him, and Denzel Valentine, by the love of God, stays healthy, six man is probably his ceiling, right?
I mean, absolutely. And before we move on, as we're talking about what to expect from Valentine, and I also mentioned that Zipser lost his job as the starting three on this team already, just 10 games or so into the season. This stat comes from Jason Pat, a.k.a. Bulls J., you know, the contributor for Bulls Blogger. He tweeted this out yesterday. Denzel Valentine and Paul Zipser have the third worst and worst real plus minuses, respectively, among all small forwards in the NBA.
Yikes.
There's that for you.
Well, I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit on Paul Zipser. I think that maybe Fred Hoiberg demoting him will give him the opportunity to, you know, have that motivation to earn that spot back. And maybe that's what Fred Hoiberg's doing here, kind of just testing guys out. One last thing, too, is at a certain point here, doesn't Fred Hoiberg have to try and figure out who he's going to stick with in the starting lineup, and even guys that he's going to continue to play in rotations as far as 8, 9, possibly 10, 11 guys? Do you think that he's got kind of an idea of what he wants out there on a daily night, I guess I would say, every game? And do you see that changing at all when Zach LaVine comes in, or is it kind of going to be like, all right, we plug Zach LaVine in here and take one guy out, and there we go, we're moving our rotation? Or is he going to kind of play around with that once LaVine comes back?
I mean, I think you'll see, assuming that LaVine comes back and is the player we all expect him to be, if not better, it's not like he's not going to earn a permanent starting spot. Like, LaVine's going to start. As for who loses out on that and whether other parts of the starting rotation are up for grabs, I think Dunn and Grant are still battling for that starting point guard spot. Sounds like they're going to let Dunn play point guard and have Grant shift to the two, at least to start against the Thunder. But Hoiberg's going to continue shuffling that and letting those guys fight it out until he thinks that one of those two proves themselves worthy to be the permanent starter. And I'm pretty sure Justin Holiday is safe, but is he the one who is the odd man out when LaVine comes back? Because do they want to play LaVine at the two? Do they maybe want to play a little bit smaller and play LaVine at the three? Have Holiday in there, have LaVine in there, and then it's, you know, nobody's impressing at the small forward spot right now. Not Valentine, not Zipser. I can't imagine Pondexter is the full season-long solution there. We saw Hoiberg shuffle with his rotation a lot last season. Yes, granted, now this season, different pieces, but it's a rebuild. And Paxson has said, look, this is about player evaluation this season. It's not about wins and losses. I think you're going to continue to see Hoiberg do a lot of different things when it comes to that rotation. And that's going to last all season long.
Last thing I want to clear up before we are out of here is, Matt, can you explain, please, to our new listeners, the ones that haven't listened to us on the Debatables, our new listeners, can you please explain to them the 40-minute conversation we had about the Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotic situation? Because there are some people that have listened to our episodes that seem like fairly new listeners that think that we are anti-Nico, that we have this weird vendetta against Nico Mirotic, and that we're all pro Bobby Portis, and that we think that Nico Mirotic was completely 100% at fault here. Can you kind of clear that up for some people here? Because I think people are getting misconstrued by what we said yesterday.
Yeah, maybe those people had something blocking their ear canals. Look, I will admit, our conversation about Nico and Bobby in our first Locked On Bulls episode definitely tended to shift towards siding with Bobby as opposed to Nico. I'm not saying that Bobby Portis is a saint. I'm not saying that Nico Mirotic is the worst piece of scum that's ever seen the NBA and he should, you know, go back to Europe and never see the light of an NBA court ever again. Personally, I'm a realist, and I look at the situation that the Bulls are in now. No, the front office has not handled this well. They could be handling it better. Fred Hoiberg's clearly sick of talking about it, but they're in a precarious position where Nico can't be traded until the 15th of January. And if he's the one you want out, then if and when he is cleared to play and come back, sit him. If you're going to trade him anyway, he's not part of the future plans moving forward, sit him. I am not convinced that Bobby Portis can be a great, hell no, not even good, contributing NBA player. I'm not convinced yet, but I'm not ready to give up on him, and I'm ready to give up on Nico. I don't know about you, Jordan, that's the way I see
it.
Yeah,
I'm glad you said that too. And there's also, like, when we said that the steps that John Paxson and Fred Hoiberg were taking after the fact, when we were talking about how they've handled it, we were talking yesterday about over the course of the last week how they've tried to handle this and the way they've tried to play it to the media. Because what else do you want them to go out there and say? Like, they get that this happened and we ripped on them for 40 minutes. We sat here and ripped on them. I played clips from John Paxson's interview, you know, his press conference, when he said that, you know, one of our strengths here this season is trying to develop and build a culture that lasts. And we laughed at them. We laughed at them when this fight broke out. We said, this is a joke. This is just another mark on Garpax and how they tell us one thing and then clearly there's another thing happening here. So we're not a pro Garpax podcast either. So let's just get that straight.
No, but if you read between the lines, based on the comments that Paxson made immediately following the incident and what he has said after, what Hoiberg has said after, they made it clear that it was not only 100% Bobby's fault and that Nico was in fact the instigator. You think that maybe there's a reason they said those things? You think maybe there's a reason Nico and his camp is kind of ticked off that they did make that information known to the media and the public? It's because they realized that, yeah, we did just sign Nico to this 2-year deal, but we had a team option on the second year anyway. We might just cut our losses and see what Bobby Portis is, because after 3 seasons, we kind of know what Nico is. And hey, guess what? When he was a restricted free agent, he got 0 offers. Maybe that should tell you something about whether or not the Bulls should want to keep Nico around.
Last thing too about it is the restrictions that they hit, the Bulls had in terms of both players. So the fact that Nico can't get traded till January 15th, and the fact that Bobby Portis is here, Bobby Portis is 4 years younger than Nico Mirotic is. Bobby Portis is also worth a fraction of what Nico Mirotic is owed financially. So in terms of what the Bulls are trying to do, remember, flexibility, that word flexibility, they've thrown it around a bunch of different times over the course of the last calendar year. So if you add all those things up together, it clearly shows you that Bobby Portis is the guy that's going to stay and Nico Mirotic is the guy that's going to leave. Now, if the situation was, well, Bobby or Nico Mirotic didn't have to wait until get traded till January 15th, he wouldn't be here today. He would not be here today. But they have to deal with it because they want the player that's here and that was only the one that punched Nico. They want him here to stay for this rebuild to see what they still have. And they've decided that, you know what? Nico doesn't want to be around Bobby. He doesn't want to resolve the situation. So we have to make some type of move. And this is the move that they have to make. And I don't know what else you want the Bulls front office to do until that point where they can move Mirotic, because it's still just going to be awkward. And I think the things that they've said over the course of the last couple of days, the way that they've approached it, is probably the best situation that they could approach it in terms of what they want. Now, it's easy to say you can go cut Portis and cut ties with him and that's it, and then the situation's resolved, but what about the locker room that's all sided with Bobby Portis? What happens if you cut Bobby Portis, and what do you do to the locker room now that you kept Nico Mirotic and all the guys that backed Bobby Portis, you just let him walk? What happens then? So there's a lot of other questions that you have to really consider before just saying, oh, you guys are idiots. You guys just love Nico. You hate Nico Mirotic. You love Bobby Portis. Like, that's not the case.
Well, look, no, it's not the case, but I'm just trying to look at it pragmatically and also just read between the lines a little bit and say, hey, if the front office said some things about this being partly Nico's fault, and we also are getting little reports here and there about the fact that people in that Bulls locker room, players on that team, understood where Bobby was coming from and why he was mad at Nico, and people within the organization are taking the side of the guy who punched and not the guy who took the punch, maybe that should tell you something about Nico Mirotic.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we're Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Locked On Bulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, literally anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. So make sure you hit that subscribe button. Subscribe to the Locked On Bulls Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter, also Locked On Bulls. Follow our guys over at Locked On Bears. Remember, all your Bears content there too. So if you like what we're doing here, they're doing just as good of a job over at Locked On Bears. So go give them a subscribe. Remember, the jersey contest, we are going to continue to push this until we make our announcement on Tuesday of who's going to win this jersey. And don't get mad. Don't get upset if you don't win, because there's going to be plenty of more promotions going on throughout the end of the month and the end of the year. So we're going to be giving away a lot more things. This is just one of those giveaways. But Lowry Marketing Jersey, remember, follow us, retweet us, favorite us on Twitter. Grab us a screenshot of you subscribing to the show. Email it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com and you'll have triple the chance to win the jersey. Or go like us on Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonbulls and like the photo and you'll be automatically entered to win. You don't have to do all 3 of these. You can just do 1 of them to enter the contest. That's also something I wanted to clear up. So, but for Jordan and Matt, enjoy the game tonight and we will be back tomorrow for you.